Back with you midweek Wednesday, wrapping up the month of June. Wednesday, June 30th, 2021 on Connecticut Today. Ranked choice voting. Monty Frank joined us again, the former lieutenant gubernatorial candidate here in Connecticut on the ticket back in 2018 with the late Oz Griebel. Ranked choice voting being used in the New York Democrat mayoral primary. So Monty checked in on that to give his reaction to what he saw going on in the preceding days. Bill Dunlap, a return visit from one of our go-to guys on the law from Quinnipiac University, just passed the news at 5:30. He explained to us why Bill Cosby got out of jail. And I had some thoughts also in the show about name, image, and likeness. NIL, college athletes are going to be able to cut their own endorsement deals. I think that's a really bad idea. You know on this show that I make very evident. I rail at politicians. I mean, it makes my head explode. It makes my eyes hurt. It makes my ear, my hair hurts. My teeth hurt. When I see politicians just jumping on a bandwagon, not because there's any moral or political or fiscal sense to something. It's just, it's the hip thing to do. What am I talking about? Well, this movement for what are called NIL. N as in Nancy, I as in ice cream, L as in Larry. NIL means name, image, and likeness. Basically, what's going to start soon, in fact, the UConn Board of Trustees voted today to let this happen. Athletes will be able to sign endorsement deals beginning on July 12th. Now, where did this come from? Well, about 3 or 4 years ago, there was a lot of momentum building that, well, you should pay student athletes because they bring in money for the school. To which I have always said, and a lot of people, some very prominent, I think like Charles Barkley, who agrees on this, well, they are getting paid. They're getting, in most universities, after 4 years, if they choose to stay there 4 years, they're getting an education worth about $250,000. So between the time they're 18 and 22, the 4 years they should stay at a university, they're getting an education. Basically, if you figure about $50,000 is what it costs, some schools that are prominent athletically cost far more. Some are up in the $70,000 a year category right now, which would make it with fees and everything almost $300,000 a year. So, yeah, they're getting paid. They are getting a free ride at school. So they are getting an education that millions of people can't afford in this country. They can't. No matter how much student aid's out there, no matter how many loans are out there, which is a racket in and above itself. I've done shows on that. I'll do more in the future. A lot of people can't go. So an athlete is approached by a coach or a school. They say, hey, come here free. That's always been the agreement, right? And it's been that way for 50, 60, 70, 80 years, I guess. And I don't know when, you know, the idea of a scholarship began. I have no idea. And then, of course, we had the era of the mega TV contracts and everything, and some of these schools who draw, I mean, Michigan draws 100-something thousand for their football games. You know, you have these basketball powerhouses by Duke. And suddenly, the notion began that, well, these students have to get paid, which I've always thought is ludicrous. Because with the payment, and with it changes the entire dynamic. So when colleges and universities and feckless politicians realized that you can't really just pay the football team or the basketball team because the women's teams want to get paid and you would likely lose the Title IX case because, you know, the women's golf team would sue the University of Michigan saying, hey, it shouldn't matter that we don't draw 80,000 or 100,000 people to our matches. We're student athletes too. And when schools and politicians began realizing, hey, we'll get murdered on this under Title IX, and Title IX rules when it comes to athletics for men and women. They said, well, okay, let's go with this name, image, and likeness deal, this NIL that you're going to hear a lot about over the next 6 or 8 months or a year. Now, the basis of NIL did have a firm legal standing. Ed O'Bannon, a former basketball player for UCLA, he found out that his name and image and likeness was being used in a video game, to which he said, hey, wait a minute. I didn't give my okay on this. No. So there was a long, protracted legal argument, and he essentially won. There were some technicalities, but he essentially won. So now, college sports, big-time college sports, of course, as UConn represents us, and in Connecticut, of course, at least for men's and women's basketball. I mean, there are a bunch of D1, you know, colleges in the state who enjoy national, rankings from time to time, hockey and baseball and stuff like that. But basically, UConn is the flag, is our athletic flag of the state. So now there is this name, image, and likeness where you have the capacity being instituted by these schools in which they're just throwing their hands up in the air saying, you know what, we can't pay all these people, but we're going to let them go out and cut their own deals. And everybody like Dick Blumenthal and Chris Murphy and everybody in Congress, oh, this is great. Look at this. They're going to be able to make money while they play their sports and make money for their schools. Well, number one, you know, this argument of, well, they're making a mega entity money by playing a varsity sport without getting paid for it, that's wrong on numerous angles. Number one, welcome to America, right? When you're in your teens and 20s, you often work for mega corporations and don't get paid maybe what you think. Think, geez, I don't know, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, Popeyes. Yeah, you're in your teens and early 20s, and these are multi-billion dollar companies, and all you're getting is minimum wage or whatever. Except when you go to a school, yeah, well, look at all this money UConn makes. Look at blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but you know what? You're getting a free education. Now, part of this problem is that the idea of an education is not valued anymore. So that's part of the problem. But there is an aspect of this, and we'll hear what Mr. Blumenthal says with Melissa tomorrow morning. And I'd love to have Mr. Murphy actually chime in on this once. There's an aspect of this that I know for sure that coaches are worried about, that schools are worried about, but nobody say anything because they're all going to want to stick their heads in the sand on this. And this is why I think I could be wrong, and maybe I'll be 100% wrong, and I'll fess up to it. But this idea of athletes like, you know, the UConn men's and women's basketball players, they're being able to cut their own deals. This has all the potential to be a nightmare. And I'll tell you why. Traffic and weather together first, though, on WICC. Athletes at UConn can sign endorsement deals. And this is going all around the country right now. We're seeing this in various states and different parts of the country. UConn's Board of Trustees voting unanimously Wednesday to okay a plan that would let the school's athletes sign endorsement deals and hire a sports agent or a lawyer beginning on July 12th. Now, this is meant to be kind of a salve, an ointment to maybe cool the burn of people who say, no, you should pay these people cash. Well, some folks finally said, well, wait a minute. We can make more money this way if we cut our own deals. And you may be thinking about it saying, well, Paul, what's the big deal? Why are you so bent out of shape about this? I'll tell you why, because it's idiotic. And let me tell you why. It's as plain as the nose on your face. Professional athletes all get what? To one extreme or another, whether it's Tom Brady or the last guy that makes the Tampa Bay Bucks. What do they all get? They all get money. and they negotiate their own deals or they have their agent do it. So in the end, both sides agree to what the money will be. And there's just, sometimes there's rancor, but generally, Tom Brady goes into a game knowing he's making X amount of a season. His running backs do, his wide receivers do. So the fact that Tom Brady's making five or six times what a wide receiver might be making, that's a moot point because they both willingly sign deals. And if Tom Brady gets the accolades for throwing three touchdown passes every game, the receivers there generally are okay with it because they're getting paid. It's a level playing field. Name, image, and likeness won't be nearly a level playing field. Why? Well, it says right here in the story in the Hartford Courant today. The ability to sign endorsements is expected to especially benefit athletes like UConn point guard Paige Buckers, who have high name recognition and large social media followings. Athletes may endorse products on their social media feeds or generate ad revenue off accounts on YouTube and other platforms. That's great. I understand that. But let me ask you something. And I've dealt with college athletics, you know, for 10 years at Quinnipiac, and then before that I did a lot of reporting doing local cable casts of Yale and Southern and UNH, New Haven back in the day. That was all a scenario where nobody was getting paid. Nobody was getting an SUV from a local car dealership. Nobody was getting, you know, an endorsement deal for a hospital, right? So an outstanding person on, or maybe the starting five for Coach Hurley on the men's side of UConn or for Gina Oriem on the women's side, maybe they're all going to get SUVs. Maybe they'll all do autograph signings, whatever. Okay, the starting five. What about the other, and I think there are 15 scholarships on a women's roster now? I don't know. What about the rest of the team? What about on a college football scenario where you've got this running back and he runs for 2,000 yards in a season and this and the other, and he's at Alabama or he's at LSU, and he's got, you know, a local bank endorsement, and he's got a restaurant endorsement, and he does equipment signings, future Hall of Famer, he's got an SUV or two or whatever. Well, that's great. The offensive line gets what? The guards, the tackle, the center, the extra blocking tight ends who help that kid get those yards. What are they going to get? Folks, you see what I'm driving at here? And again, this has all the potential to blow up because this has all the potential. And I know everybody's going to yes it to death and say, well, no, we'll take care of it. This has a potential, I think. I could be wrong. This has an incredible potential to poison locker rooms. I mean, think about it. Think about it. And now it's suddenly being used as a way to recruit. You have all these schools saying, hey, I can get you this and that in this market. And they can hire an attorney. So what happens if you get this really hot shot, another hot shot women's recruit, or on the men's side at UConn, and oh, they're almost going to sign with UConn, and then all of a sudden, like I said the other day, you know, the St. John's coaches make say, hey, you know what? You know, love UConn, Coach Hurley, great program there, but, you know, there's only so much money in Mansfield, Connecticut. There's only so much money in Connecticut. You come to play for St. John's, you're in the city. You're in Queens, man. And this is already being used by schools. It was a big article the other day. One was in the Wall Street Journal, and one was in the Washington Post, I think. There was another in The Athletic, too. That this ability now for athletes to sign their own deals, which on the face of it sounds great for the five or six stars on every team. If you run a big-dollar car dealership, and you got SUVs to move, and you have to do this and that, are you going to, like, host autograph signings by the last person on the bench? No. You want to get people in the place. So, again, folks, the great equalizer in the professional ranks is money, and everybody's getting some. Hence, a professional athlete. So we're about to insert that into UConn athletics and many programs around the country. Listen, a ton of people know this is a bad idea. Even Danny Hurley the other day told Yahoo Sports he has no idea how this is going to work. But again, because we have dopes in society who don't regard a free $250,000 education as being paid, that's where we are. Traffic and weather together, 526 on WICC. Joining us right now is a gentleman who we've had on the show numerous times. You may remember he was the lieutenant governor nominee back in 2018, running alongside the late Oz Griebel and a Griebel and Monty Frank ticket. Monty Frank joins us once again. Monty, a longtime advocate of ranked choice voting, which, Monty, good to hear from you again. You know, ranked choice voting, a lot of places have been using it. Some states use it. It's used with some regularity in some areas. But the New York Democratic mayoral primary was supposed to be this big coming out for ranked choice voting. Monty, I guess it did work to some extent, but now we're hearing today there were some irregularities here. They're going to start all over again. First of all, great to talk to you again. What do you think so far?
Hey, Paul, how are you? Good to be back with you.
Thanks.
Look, I don't think you throw out the baby with the bathwater. So, you know, unfortunately, the New York City Board of Elections has been a disaster for decades.
Yeah.
And continues to be a disaster. It's a board that probably ought to be dismantled. And people who have actually training in how to run elections ought to do it. But, you know, I don't think that the incompetence of the New York City Board of Elections should taint what was a very successful application of ranked choice voting. And we can talk about why it was a success. And I think eventually the New York City Board of Elections will get it right. The mistake they made yesterday when they released those numbers, you know, I think they should have caught it immediately before they released the numbers, because the mistake is just so obvious. And people saw it right away, and they pulled down those numbers, and they'll run it again, and they'll take out the 135,000 erroneous votes, and which were literally test votes that were in the system that they didn't clear out before they put in the real votes.
You know, Monty, you would think that, and listen, you're right, all systems have their foibles. Everything has to be tested. I mean, obviously, we want these systems to be tested, but look, I'm no election, God knows, Monty, I'm no election official, no authority. I find my polling place every 2 or 4 years. I vote, I get my little sticker, I buy a cookie from the school kids here who are selling them, and I'm on my merry way. But you would have thought, Monty, that maybe there would have been, you know, enough dry runs or enough testing before this happened. Are you hearing anything directly there from folks you may know, Monty, inside of New York or on the ground as to why these test ballots turned up, or are we still trying to figure that out?
Well, I've looked at what's been publicly reported. I do know from insiders that the New York City Board of Elections has been a disaster for a long period of time. And no one seems to be surprised that they, one, refused to accept professional help in running it, two, did it on their own, and three, released numbers without clearing out the test votes from the system. You know, so they did test it. And it performed perfectly. But they didn't pull out the erroneous test votes when they released the numbers. So they reported 940,000 votes when only 800,000 people had actually voted.
Oops.
Putting the absentee ballots aside. And those still haven't come in yet, or haven't been counted or added to the system.
Monty Frank is the guest. Monty, hang on. We'll be back with you after a short break. Monty Frank, a one-time lieutenant governor candidate here in Connecticut, and a very loud and devoted disciple of ranked choice voting, which is being used in New York. It was. Other states are using it, and this could be the wave of the future. Monty, back with you momentarily. First, traffic and weather together, 436 on WICC. A few more minutes with Monty Frank, who was the lieutenant governor's candidate last time around on a ticket with the late Oz Griebel back in the 2018 election cycle. And Monty is a proponent, as many are around the country, of ranked choice voting, which kind of had its coming out policy, kind of, sort of, at least for the media anyway, in New York City. Monty, stripping away what happened in New York and getting back to where it's been used in the country, I don't think we've spoken since the last election cycle. So from last November up until now, let's set aside any of the tomfoolery going on with the New York Board of Elections here, the city's Board of Elections, as you correctly point out, which is very inept at best. Any feedback that you have gotten or news we should know about ranked choice voting, Monty, from the last cycle in last November?
Well, if you look at what happened in New York, putting aside the incompetence of the New York City Election Board, we saw a very good competitive election on the issues that matter to the people of New York. What you did not see is a lot of rancor. People did not attack each other on all sorts of stuff that you typically see in wide open elections. The negative campaigning was not there. Instead, what you saw was the candidates out there trying to appeal to the broadest constituency that they could. And that's what makes ranked choice voting so appealable to the voters of New York City, and certainly I think would do wonders for the state of Connecticut. You know, I think back to my campaign, and, you know, if people felt comfortable voting for me and Oz without having to deal with the wasted vote conundrum, and then they could pick the lesser of two evils as their number two choice, Oz, who I think would have been a transformational governor, he could have stood a really good shot at winning. And that's what you want. You want to create a system where there's competition, where the best and the brightest can emerge on the issues, and for providing a broad constituency of voters with reasons why they ought to vote for that candidate, not why they should not vote for the other. We've been in a race to the bottom. It's time that we have a race to the top, and ranked choice voting could accomplish that.
Monty, one thing that I did see, and you may have seen, in New York, and I do go to a lot of left-leaning blogs, too, to see just what the tenor is on both sides of the aisle. And I know, Monty, there was some criticism of Catherine Garcia and Andrew Yang doing these unity campaign events, campaigning together, you know, telling people, you know, either, for example, you know, stay away from Maya Wiley or Eric Adams, or if you're going to vote for them, you know, put us at number two or number three. Good, bad, or otherwise, do you think? Does that open up a kind of a new campaign tactic? Because, you know, again, in some of these blogs and posts I've read, maybe it's because people are unfamiliar with this, Monty, they're like, well, wait a minute, what's this, like, unity campaign events here or appearances? I don't get this. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, one, it didn't work. Eric Adams appears to be the victor here despite those efforts. Andrew Yang did not do particularly well in the voting and has already conceded. But, you know, to the extent that candidates are collaborating and trying to join together to promote ideas, I think it's a good thing. It's certainly better than what we see in wide open elections in Connecticut and elsewhere, where, you know, people are just attacking each other and taking people down with negative advertising. You saw virtually no negative advertising, and no negative campaigning, because candidates, when they have to appeal to a broader constituency, realize it doesn't work, and they've got to convince voters why they ought to vote for their ideas and their leadership. And so I think, you know, we'll see how this plays out a little over time, but everything I saw from the way the campaign was run in New York was very encouraging and a model that could translate very well to Connecticut. You know, I think back to the Republican primary in 2018, where you had a number of people who were running, and you had a Now, less votes than the number of people who could fit into Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
That is not a system that creates the best and the brightest for the general election.
And, you know, Maaz, I could see, I'm sorry, Monty, I could see the point you make, because if you know that a voter can still rank you relatively high in a big field, maybe not number one, but number two or number three, I think, Monty, you're right. You may think twice about, well, wait a minute, if I go out on these campaign runs and I do all these appearances and I go to the town fairs and committee meetings and all this, and if I start really negative, going negative a candidate A or B, it may be narrowly focused, but I could lose some standing in the way people rank me.
Absolutely. And so you saw a lot of people competing for that second and third spot.
Yeah.
So someone like Eric Adams, who was the front runner, he did a really good job to appeal to the broadest constituency that mm-hmm. he could in New York. And therefore, all right, maybe he didn't get as many number one votes as he could have, but he got a lot.
Yeah.
But certainly he competed very well for the number two and number three votes that we'll see, and that's what's going to get him across that 50% line.
Mm. Monty is affiliated with the Serve America movement, so check out the website, joinsam.org, joinsam as in Michael, .org. Always good to hear from you. Monty, any news with this? Keep us up to date. You have the phone number. We're all set. Monty Frank, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul. Take care.
Appreciate it. Yep, Monty Frank. Check it out, joinsam.org. Folks, so listen, this whole ranked choice voting thing is kind of interesting. I'm still on the I make no bones about the fact that I'm on the fence about it, but you could rank the candidates you would want in a ranked choice voting race, and okay, your number one guy or gal may not win, but they may not have enough first place votes you think to win. But if you combine the first place votes with the second or third place votes, they may end up winning, even though they don't have enough first place votes. You see, so it's all like a shell game. It's a domino game. Like, what are the moves you make to eventually have the biggest impact? Traffic and weather together, Wall Street, and we continue straight ahead on WICC. Big story of the day today, you see all over the news, social media, people go, huh, what? Cosby's out. Well, as we said earlier, they're explaining that basically this is not a judgment, again, on his guilt or innocence. This has something to do with what happened years before. And, of course, to parse this all out for us, especially guys like me who need things explained very simply, our buddy Bill Dunlap joins us, a law professor of renown at Quinnipiac University, the law school there. Bill, good to hear from you again. How are you, sir?
Doing just fine, and I'll be much better when this is all over.
Yeah, you mean the heat, or Cosby, or both,
and the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah. Bill, thanks for joining us. Explain what happened here, because I'm reading, Bill, where the prosecutors or the state Supreme Court people in Pennsylvania are going out of their way to say, well, wait a minute, no, this is not a judgment on whether he did something or not. Talk about that.
Oh, well, that is absolutely true. This has nothing whatsoever to do with his guilt or innocence. And in a way, this is a classic example of a situation where, well, it's a case that gives the law and lawyers and courts a bad name.
Wow.
But it's probably absolutely right. And it's just a very, very awkward situation because of the way the two district attorneys involved, the two prosecutors involved, played out here.
Okay, so walk us through exactly what happened. We all know it was a very protracted, high-profile case, Bill. Oh, my God, for 2 or 3 months we were like, Bill Cosby? Are you kidding?
Yeah.
And it came on the cusp of the Me Too movement. So what exactly happened here to cause this, Bill?
Well, the original prosecutor, Mr. Castor, decided that there was simply not enough evidence here to get a conviction. He admitted that there was enough evidence to bring a prosecution, but it's a job. One of the jobs of a prosecutor is not to bring cases where they are fairly clearly not winnable. He decided this was one of those cases, but rather than leave the alleged victim in this case without any remedy at all, he wanted, this is his story, that he wanted to create a situation where she would be able to get a civil judgment against Cosby, be able to sue him, even if there would not be a prosecution. So his version of this is, and it appears to be exactly right, and it's what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court relies on, his version was that he made an announcement that he would not prosecute Cosby for this particular alleged rape, thus meaning he was no longer liable for prosecution and then no longer had any Fifth Amendment rights to refuse to testify because he had no more legal jeopardy. So once that happened, he had no choice, at least he and his lawyers believe, that he had no choice but to go into the depositions in the civil case and admit, in many cases, what had happened. And that led to a $3 million plus judgment against him in the civil court. But it was the reliance, his reliance on not an agreement, but a decision by the prosecutors not to prosecute him, led him to make incriminating statements in the civil case. And then Mr. Castor's successor decided to use that information in a criminal prosecution.
So, Bill, does anybody then go to Mr. Pastor's successor? And or maybe they did. You'd be able to tell me how many of them. Maybe that's a question. Said, hey, you're on thin ice here, because they may tell him, Bill, exactly what you told me. Do you think that happened? Do you think he was being bullheaded about it? Did he get caught up in the news cycle and the Me Too thing? Why do you think he would do that, knowing exactly, I would think, of what you just told me?
Well, in fact, what you were describing did happen. He wrote a long letter to his successor saying, you can't do this. If you want to bring a case, that's one thing, but you cannot use the evidence that he gave in the civil case in reliance on my assurance that there would be no prosecution for this particular rape. He made very clear, if you have evidence of other rapes that occurred in this county, you can certainly bring that, but you cannot use this evidence. But she went ahead and used it anyway. And my impression at the time was, this is very risky, but everybody, virtually everybody, appeared to be behind her. She got the conviction. The conviction was upheld on appeal, but eventually the state Supreme Court said, no, there's a question of reliance here, a question of fundamental fairness. You cannot tell a criminal defendant that he can rely on something and then pull that away from him.
And then finally, Bill, was there any time, and you may remember more because, I mean, I followed it, but it was a bunch of years ago. Was there any time during the actual trial where Bill Cosby was convicted, did the judge say, or could he have said, no, you can't do this? Why are you doing this?
I believe my recollection is, but I haven't seen anything about that today since the opinion came down. My recollection is that the Cosby team made several motions saying that this evidence should not be allowed, but that the trial judge allowed the evidence. Now, you can say, well, the trial judge made a mistake there, and that's what led to this overturning today. But without that evidence, I don't think there ever would have been a conviction in the first place.
Excellent. Bill Dunlop, thank you so much. Now even I understand it. Quinnipiac University law professor Bill Dunlop. We love having him on to make this stuff understandable. Bill, thank you. Take care, and we'll be talking down the road. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Bye.
All right, there you go. Bill Dunlop with us. Traffic and weather together. How about that? So all the legal eagles, folks, as I kind of said, did they not know this could happen? And even Bill said there that he had his misgivings. But again, you know, sometimes there's, you know, it's the old thing. Well, you got to do it, because if we don't do it, we're going to catch hell for it. You know, there you go.